Hello, my name is Dr. Kim Williams, Jr. I'm a board-certified neurological surgeon who is spine fellowship trained in complex adult and pediatric deformity. And we're here to talk about spine surgery and neurosurgery in general.
Welcome to the Discover Montcalm podcast, where we are going to look at the communities, the businesses, the attractions, and the people that make up Montcalm County. Here is your podcast host, Dwayne Weed.
Hello, my name is Dwayne, the host and producer of the Discover Montcalm podcast, and today we're going to go to the town of Sheridan, the Sheridan Community Hospital, where I have Dr. Williams here today, and we're going to talk a little bit about neurosurgery. There we go. Let it roll off my tongue a little bit. Dr. Williams, thank you so much for stopping in today.
Thank you for having me.
Being a neurosurgeon, was that something that you wanted to do since childhood? Did you see it on a movie? Or was this something that came about for you later in your career?
So it actually came about very early for me. I was very sick as a baby. I had something called meningitis, which is inflammation of the covering of the brain. And usually it's fatal in babies.
Okay.
But I survived, and I needed something called a shunt because I had too much fluid in my brain. And so I had my own neurosurgeon growing up that I would see every year, or every year and a half until I was an adult.
Okay. So from there you went, oh, I kind of like this. I mean, it was actually being done to you. So I would think that, and I don't know this for a fact, but having it done to you as a young child probably helps you relate to other people when they come in and have to have this kind of stuff and deal with it.
Yeah, I think so. It gives you a little bit of a different perspective. Again, I, you know, just remember kind of walking in, saying hi, making sure everything was okay. And I grew up relatively normal without any disabilities, fortunately. But yeah, it sort of gave me a connection and an interest in the field that I ended up pursuing in college and then medical school and then chose as a specialty.
Okay. And what brought you to the big metropolis of Sheridan?
So I grew up in a town called South Highland, Illinois, and I went to Christian High School, Illiana Christian High School, and a lot of my friends ended up going to Hope and to Calvin.
Okay.
One of my best friends lives in Holland, Michigan with his wife. My mother actually worked at, with Spectrum, now it's Corwell. She was an oncologist there, so I've always had a connection to Grand Rapids for a long time, and when the job came available, I was looking for a new job because the market in Chicago wasn't very good at the time. And we moved up here to Grand Rapids. And then as a part of growing our practice, because I'm with Great Lakes Neurosurgical Associates in Grand Rapids, we talked to the people with Lily and the other people at Sheridan about doing some outreach there to help give access to the patients that can't make it all the way downtown.
Being a neurosurgeon, what does that entail for people out there that are going, okay, I've heard the word, but I'm not sure. So can you give us a layman's?
So I'll start with the schooling because that's sort of the first thing that everyone asks. So after high school, it's 4 years of college, usually with a science-leaning major, biology, chemistry, physics. Okay. Then you have to take an entrance exam to get into medical school called the MCAT. Then from there, once you're in medical school, it's 4 years of medical school. During your last year and a half of medical school, you have to kind of decide what you want to do. So you do research, you get exposed to different clinical fields in the hospital.
Okay.
And then when you decide what you want to do, you do applications, you apply, you do what's called sub-internships, where you go to different universities, different hospitals, and work with their neurosurgery departments. Mm-hmm. And then you have to do something called a match, where I apply to 10 programs, and those programs apply or interview 10 people, and I rank my programs 1 through 10, and they rank their people 1 through 10, and then you get put together. So if I rank a place number 1, they rank me number 1, boom, I go to that place.
All right.
And then from there, it's 7 years of neurosurgical training, including a 1-year internship of general surgery and neurology, and then 6 years of neurosurgery, which is operating on the brain, so brain tumors, aneurysms, strokes, and then operating on the spine, so degenerative disc disease, tumors, infections, you know, what have you. And then a lot of people go on to do a fellowship after they do their 7 years. So I did an 8th year where I focused on spine usually deformity, so scoliosis in teenagers and older adult patients, and other deformity. So that's what I did my fellowship in. But you can do it in brain tumors, you can do it in aneurysms, you can do it in pediatrics, you can do it in something called functional neurosurgery, like deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's disease.
So it's kind of, your day could be all over the map.
Yes.
You know, so it's getting up and you're dealing with something that's similar, but everything's different because, as you just mentioned, the different things that you could be working or working with. Is it uncommon to have this kind of quality, you know, specialty at a small rural hospital?
No, I don't believe so. I think, you know, again, it becomes an access issue for the patients and, you know, community outreach. Where I went to medical school at University of Illinois Chicago, mm-hmm. they had a big community outreach. That was their main focus. They had a lot of students that would go into primary care, and they were given scholarships to go to underserved communities. I think that's a big part of what our calling is, to help people. And, you know, not everyone can make it to Grand Rapids. I mean, I lived in Philadelphia for residency. My wife's from New York. I grew up in Chicago. You know, so, I mean, when people say the big city, Grand Rapids, I laugh a little bit. But, you know, it's still, you know, for people who aren't used to the S-curve. I mean, I'm barely used to the S-curve, right?
Oh, I'll tell you what, that S-curve is a thing of it, you know, all by itself. And that's kind of what's neat when I talked to Lily in a previous episode about Sheridan, is the fact that trying to bring these services to an area that is making it easier for the population.
Yes.
You know, so you don't have to be in a big city, whether it's Chicago, Philadelphia, Grand Rapids. They can get the same kind of care. You've been in big hospitals. You've been in, you know, probably different size. What's something about Sheridan that you find to be unique, that for you personally, do you like the smaller or do you like the more fast-paced?
I like the fact that you know everyone there really quickly. People get to know you. There is a camaraderie there. You know, I'm hesitant to say the word family, but in a sense, you know, you have sort of that kind of familiarity. You know who you can rely on. You know who's going to be there every time you're there.
Okay.
Sometimes in some of the bigger hospitals, it takes a lot longer to get to know everyone. You know, in my residency, I spent 7 years at a huge tertiary hospital. By my seventh year, I knew everybody at that point. But
that's a long time.
Yeah.
That's
but even then, there's a ton of turnover because me being there for 7 years, the average residency is about four. So people would do their full residency and be gone. Okay. And I'm still there.
Yeah. You know. And I would think that you've got quality people surrounding you that you build up, because it is maybe a smaller pool, that you build up a pretty good team of people that get to know you and you get to know them. And, you know, because I would think a surgeon and his team or her team, it's good to have good people surrounding you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at Sheridan, we kind of handpick the people that we work with all the time to come up and work with us. And, you know, we know everyone who's going to be in our case every time, you know, which is a definite benefit.
I could see that, you know, and that's not my field. And it's, you know, we always have that joke sometimes. Well, and I sometimes will tell my kids or, you know, the students that, you know, this isn't brain surgery. We can figure this out. And even a brain surgeon can figure it out. But in our case, you know, we don't have to have that much schooling to figure out what we need to do from here. Since you've been in the profession, and this is more of a curiosity question, I know you probably have to say, well, they're all different, but on average, how long's the average surgery that you're in without complications?
Probably 2 to 3 hours. Okay. It depends. If I'm doing a fusion where I'm putting in screws in someone's neck or someone's back, that's probably 3 to 5 hours.
Okay.
I do a lot more minimally invasive, smaller incisions, which does cut the time, cuts the blood loss, cuts the how much tissue you're dissecting, how much muscle you got to remove and bone and such. But If it's just taking out a piece of a disc or drilling away some bone, you know, that's 2 to 3 hours if it's putting in.
You make it sound like it, well, for you it is an everyday thing almost, but no. For us it's like, whoa, I think that's pretty major. Technology's changed, and I'm sure that, you know, if you go back 10 years, it's like night and day. And in the time that you've started to now, what are some of the technological changes that are making your job, let's say, easier?
So to go back a little further, before I started medical school, they changed how they were training neurosurgeons, where the neurosurgeons would put in the screws into the back and into the neck. Before then, it was all orthopedists. Okay. So the neurosurgeons would remove the bone, the orthopedist would put in the screw. That's kind of how it was done for many, many years, you know, in the 80s and 90s. In fact, even in the 80s, they didn't even always have screws. So still a very young, I guess now it's 2025, about 20 years old, where neurosurgery kind of started to take over. In the last 10 years specifically, the more minimally invasive, so doing these fusions through smaller incisions instead of opening the whole back and stripping all the muscle off the bone, right, and exposing the entire spine, all the bones and all the aspects of the bones, I am just making a little window in the muscle to put the screw in. And two things that have helped with that. One is something called neural navigation. The other thing is, you know, the use of robotics, to help place these pedicle screws.
And Sheridan has all that technology.
Yes, they do.
Okay. I would think that with the making smaller incisions, probably quicker healing time for the patient. It depends on how much you're digging out. I would probably agree with that.
Yes. You know, if there's smaller incisions, it's shorter hospital stay. If I don't have to leave a drain, which is a tube, to collect extra blood and fluids that build up after surgery, there's less of that. So you don't need to have drains, which gets people out of the hospital quicker. If I'm not pulling the muscle off all the bones and I'm not disrupting sort of the normal anatomy as much, then there's less pain. There's less inflammation. So it gets people out of the hospital faster.
Okay. What has been to date and what has been the longest surgery that you've been involved in? Or they just kind of all blend together after a while?
For spine, for what I do, 12 hours is probably the longest. And that would be a long fusion where you do most of the bones in the chest, you know, your thoracic bones, there's 12 of them that hold all 12 of your ribs, and then all the 5 lumbar bones, and then connecting all of those bones together and then going into the pelvis to make, try to straighten out a spine or give a normal curve back to somebody that has a what we call deformity, meaning, either you have a hunchback or flat back or something, where you can't stand up straight.
All right. 12 hours. Anybody that's listening, think about doing something in one area without much moving around and do it for 12 hours, wash dishes for 12 hours, do ironing for 12 hours, do anything. But now it's got to be mentally and physically draining on yourself when that happens.
Oh, absolutely. You get used to it because it's been so long. I'm now in my 10th year out of residency. So it's become that routine is not really the right answer, but I'm used to what it takes to kind of get through the surgery and get through the day. And I'm able to prepare beforehand, eat a big breakfast kind of a thing.
Okay.
And make sure that everyone in the room is ready to go.
Sure. Well, and I would think that's great if I was on your table that you are prepared. And with that, and this is, everybody's got their own little things. Do you have any rituals how you mentally prepare yourself for any kind of surgery? Is there any, things that, I got to wear this special cap, or do you have any, special things that you do to prepare yourself?
It's not rituals per se. It's more just making sure we have all the things that we need preemptively so that, we're not adding or delaying step 12 because we didn't have step 2 ready to go.
Right.
So it's making sure we have all the suture, making sure we have all the screws in the room, making sure we have the correct table and it's in the correct position, making sure that the anesthesiologist knows, do we need to put the Foley in, which is the tube into the bladder, or okay. do we need to put a blood pressure monitor in the artery in the wrist? You know, having those kind of things ready to go, I think is more important. Having the right music.
Well, and again, I mean, I guess everybody's different. Everybody has the way that they run their room. And, you know, we mentioned it earlier, it's a team. You know, you've got your specialty, they have their specialty, but, you know, to try to, you know, I just was kind of curious, you know, this curiosity. I like to know the behind the scenes of how things work. I prefer to hear about it than to have it done to me. You know, I think that's probably most people in life. What's something, I'm going to go a little lighter on a question here. What's something that the TV shows might get wrong? I know I'm wrong about your profession.
It's not nearly as dramatic as they make it seem. I will say this. I watched all of House because I was in medical school, and both of my parents were physicians, and I would watch it with them on Sunday evening, and they would roll their eyes. And I'm like, no, this is awesome. But I didn't know anything. I was in medical school.
Right.
And now I watch clips of House. I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, this would never happen this way.
You know, the recent one, The Pit, with Noah Wiley, I thought that was pretty good in the sense of – and. To add to that, Scrubs is probably the most accurate show because it depicts sort of the interpersonal differences between the different people in the hospital.
Okay. So the comedy was more real than some of the dramas.
Yes. And not medically real. All the medicine is usually way off.
Right.
But, you know, sort of the interactions between surgery and medicine or between the administrative doctor and the guy who takes all the calls and sees all the patients on the floor, you know. And in The Pit, you had the chief medical officer in the ER complaining about something called a Press-Ganey score, which is a patient score where they can say that they love or hate a doctor.
Right.
And the hospital does a lot of stuff based on that, you know, in terms of how they pay physicians or, you know, who gets promoted, who doesn't.
Right.
And, you know, they hit a lot of those things. And some of the characters on that show, I was that scared third-year medical student. I was that overconfident fourth-year medical student. I was the scared intern that was too slow. You know, I was the senior resident who knew everybody and knew exactly what to do. And I'm also now the tired attending that just sighs every time something happens.
Right.
Right.
So you can relate.
Exactly.
You can relate. You know, because I know for television purposes, it's entertainment.
Yes.
It's entertainment. And I often wonder how close to this is real. And, you know, and you kind of gave us a really good overview of,
yeah.
which is all right. When you got here today, one of the things, I asked you how your day was. And you said meetings, patients, and then you were saying that, you know, when you get home, you got to do notes. You might take your daughter to tennis. You might do some other things. This is almost 24/7 to keep up on what you're doing. Is accurate, not accurate?
Oh, absolutely. I've got two jobs. I've got three kids. That's job number one.
Yep.
You know, and then I've got, you know, the neurosurgery practice. And if I'm not at one, I got to do the other.
Yeah.
So it's constant.
And you're bringing work home with you a lot.
Almost every day.
Yeah. Because you got to keep your notes up because of things happening. You've been, at least between your place in East Grand Rapids and Sheridan, you drive that quite a bit. Do you get a chance to go out within West Michigan or Montcalm County for fun? And if so, what are some of the things that you do to kind of relax?
So I run, you know, 10, 15 miles a week. That's
okay.
Kind of just get some exercise because it's simple. You know, the kids are getting into sports a little bit, especially my daughter. I played tennis in college. She wants to play tennis more seriously. So I told her I'd be happy to ruin her childhood and make her a competitive tennis player.
Yeah. Well, at least you're laying it all on the table right from the
exactly.
beginning.
Exactly. No, and, you know, taking the kids, like, you know, they love Deer Tracks Junction and Lewis Adventure Farms. We'll go apple picking. I saw a haunted trail when I was driving over here. We'll probably go to that, you know, because it's that time of year.
Sure.
You know, they like doing those kind of things. So we're trying to get up north more, you know, see, you know, Traverse City or go up to Petoskey, go up to Mackinac, you know, try to get up there too eventually.
You will love it.
Yeah.
You will love it. I know that my family has done a lot of stuff, you know, the staycations type thing mm-hmm. where – 3 hours away, you're up at the bridge, or we just this past summer, my wife and I went up Old 23.
Okay.
What took you 3 hours from the Thumb area up took us 3 days. And we just stopped and we explored and we, lighthouses or trails and that kind of stuff. So, there is a lot to do and the lakes are pretty nice. And you being in Chicago, you're familiar with Lake Michigan.
Yeah, the only problem is now the lake is on the wrong side.
it's all what you're used to. As we wrap this up, is there anything that we can do as, to help us have better mind health? Do you have any things that you can give us as some precautions? I know that these things sometimes just happen, and it's hard to prepare for something that you don't know. But is there anything that you tell your patients, or when you see people, any tips that you can give us for better healthy?
Yes, and you're not going to like any of them. One, for bone health, having the calcium, having the vitamins, vitamin D, exercising, you need the stress of lifting weights, of moving your body, of going on walks. You need that stress on your bones to keep the bone density up and keep them healthy. Not smoking, that's another big one for bone health.
Okay.
Patience when you do have pain, because there's a lot of things that are out of our control in terms of we got to deal with insurance companies who want, physical therapy and they want smoking cessation and they want injections with pain management, and it can become quite overwhelming. We've gotten very good with my office at navigating some of these changes because they've changed things and made it more difficult to get the care that you need, which I don't like, but you have to play the game a little bit.
I'm sure.
If there is a trauma, seeking high quality care in a tertiary center is always the best option, and making sure that you're advocating for your family. And if something doesn't sound right, get a second opinion, no matter what. Always get a second opinion. This is your brain and your spinal cord and the bones in your back.
It's your body.
It's your body.
Yes.
Right. I would say, if you got 10 opinions, 9.5 of them are going to be the same.
Okay.
But it's always, sometimes it's the peace of mind. And sometimes it's just the interaction. Sometimes you just don't vibe with the person, don't like how they presented things. I see patients all the time who are like, well, I just didn't like the office visit. Okay.
Okay.
I told them the same thing the other guy told them, or girl. Right.
I understand. But, because it's something that, I've had customers that I didn't always get along with. We had to work through something. I would think that bottom line, just good communication.
Absolutely.
If you got a question, ask.
Exactly. And there's things can always go wrong, and you have to put your life in my hands literally. It's not a figure thing. I'm literally, sometimes it can be life or death, and sometimes even a simple surgery can go wrong, and you hear all these horror stories. And yes, there are things called never events in hospitals, but things happen. That's why the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm.
Right.
Right. So, because sometimes, harm happens and we have to do our best to treat it.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for coming in today. And, Sheridan Community Hospital is where you practice, but the firm that you are from, what was the name of it?
So it's Great Lakes Neurosurgical Associates, and we're private practice in Grand Rapids and greater area. So we're in all the hospitals in Grand Rapids and we come up to Sheridan.
Which I would think gives you a better, keeps you sharp, a place that you can run ideas by. And I guess you're always learning from each other and things are always changing. Everybody's body is different.
Yes.
So thank you. But before I end it, is there anything that we haven't discussed that you'd like to just throw in one last time, either about Sheridan Community Hospital or about things that would just be good information for us?
We have open available appointments. Again, we're trying to expand the access to everybody in Sheridan. So, if you're in Alma, if you're in Mount Pleasant, you don't want to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours. If you're, we are seeing people and we are bringing all of the city people that we work with to you and not making you have to go all the way down to downtown.
Okay. Dr. Williams, thank you so much for stopping in today. It's been a pleasure to get to know a little bit more about the types of surgeries that you do. My name is Dwayne, the host and producer of the Discover.com podcast. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, DiscoverMotcomPodcast.com. You can find us on Pandora, Apple, and iHeart. Go to DiscoverMotcomPodcast.com, grab the feed there, and put it in your favorite podcast browser. If you're from Montcalm County or the surrounding area, and you're doing something cool, reach out to me, 231-250-9624. My name's Dwayne. Thank you for tuning in, and remember to buy and shop locally.
The Discover Montcalm podcast wants to thank West Michigan Technology and Design Solutions, WGLM 106.3 FM, DW Video, and Business Growth Engine. Thank you for your support.